kpfk@kpfk.org and do it today.
This is KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. 98.7 FM, Santa Barbara. Worldwide at kpfk.org.
The program that you're about to hear is a rebroadcast and has previously aired here on KPFK.
The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett.
Everybody's talking about consciousness. Everybody wants that eternal kiss. Yeah, everyone's saying there's more than this. Everyone wants to follow their own bliss. Talking about one love, one blood. We sing.
On The Expansion Zone, we examine life and our quest to understand who and what we are and of the vastness of human potentials. We explore the making of our world from quantum physics to parapsychology, health, sociology, and philosophy, along with practical living. You are reminded of the possibilities in creating personal change. So for an hour, we'll stimulate and expand the mind. Well, welcome once again to the Expansion Zone. I am your host, Sonia Barrett, and I am always delighted to be here on this Monday and always wanting to thank you for tuning in to the show on 90.7 FM on your radio dial, or perhaps you are listening to the live stream at kpfk.org. Either way, good to have you with me today on yet another Expansion Zone journey. And just to kick it off, it's not a really big, heavy-duty quote, but, you know, to say hello to Monday and to a brand new week filled with possibilities. That's really the quote, is say hello to Monday and to a brand new week filled with possibilities. And the author is unknown, but Monday is always sort of, for many people, this dreaded day because it's, you know, the first business day of the week and working and so on. But perception really is everything at the end of the day. It really is how we perceive things and certainly how we perceive the start of our Monday, probably from Sunday night, will help to maybe create a more balanced Monday. And even if you run into issues in the day, it's being able to really kind of overcome it and work with it. Because, you know, it's just the way it is. It's the unexpected a great many times, but it's reaction. It's how we respond to the things that pop up in our life, the unexpecteds in particular. So today's guest, and of course, the topic is going to be based on her book, but today's guest is Marla Mervis Hartman, author of Befriend Yourself, A Guide to Freedom with Food, Peace with Your Body, and Confidence in Your Life. And that is certainly another significant and important topic because every one of us, we all have a body, and and it's how we have been dealing with that body our whole life. And so we're going to talk about a great many things around it that I think are just so essential, things that sometimes we don't think about and how it impacts us. But a bit of information on my guest. After years of struggling with her own dysfunctional body relationship, Marla has transformed her experiences into services to help women discover, honor, and appreciate their bodies. As a professional, Marla has been featured at TEDx Salinas. Marla has followed her passion for women's health down many study paths. including women's sexual wellness, postpartum care, Restore Your Core Educator, Tantra Teacher Certification, Yoga Teacher's Training, and Massage Therapy. She has a certification in Integrative Somatic Trauma Therapy. Martha is, of course, as I said, the author of Befriend Yourself, A Guide to Freedom with Food, Peace with Your Body, and Confidence in Your Life. In all of her work, Marla is devoted to empowering women to feel good about themselves and to live the life they desire. So, Marla, without further ado, welcome to the Expansion Zone. This is your first time on the show. And I should say that you are a mom and a wife and yourself all rolled into one. So that's kind of, we know that journey, you know. So anyway, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being here and I appreciate what you do and how you hold this space and how you bring in really powerful speakers. So I'm really honored to be one of them. Thank you.
Oh, you're most welcome. You know, we do things out of our own curiosity and our own interest. And that's basically how I select the guests that I have on the show. What I think that is really essential that we would like to hear at this time. And I think this about the body is really super important. So we can probably begin, you know, with just a brief insight into your journey. As I read in the bio of your struggles, just a little bit from your own words, and then we can dive into what you have created or established based on having taken that journey.
Yeah. So I am someone who's struggled with my body and with food from a very young age. And over the years of using food and using my body as a way to cope with life, I got into some really dysfunctional ways to be with myself. A lot of negative self-talk, a lot of pushing myself around, a lot of overeating, undereating, restriction, dieting, obsessing about my body, obsessing about food, binge eating, exercise bulimia. Like I really dove into every aspect of this, Sonia. And now being kind of on the other side of this, I'm helping others to heal their relationship with their body and their relationship with the food. And it's been a long journey for me. It's a long journey of recovery. And what I found along the way is that my story, the story that is uniquely mine, is actually not quite unique, that so many women resonate with my book. They resonate with my story. And that's both tragic and also the reason I told my story, because I feel like there's so many people who are struggling that need support and need to realize that there is hope and there is a way to feel good about yourselves and not be in diet culture and not have to listen to what everyone else is telling you to do with your body and with your food. And that there is also a spiritual component to this that's really important to follow. So I'll leave it at that for this moment.
Yeah. And everything you said, you're right. A lot of women actually can relate for lots of reasons that we're going to talk about further. But I want to know, what did you discover was really the root for you personally, that was the springboard or the foundation upon which these beliefs existed? Because everybody, like you said, there's a lot of women, a lot of us that have experienced this, but each person has some foundational components.
Yeah, it's so interesting. What I have noticed within my own journey and with a lot of other people's journeys and my clients' journeys, and one of my expertise is really being able to go in and figure out what was that starting point and what is that wound? What is that moment of survival that food or negative body image or obsession came in? And from that point, then we begin to attract even more negativity to ourselves. It becomes addiction, and we get into behaviors and patterns that we need to dissolve and unlearn. However, for me, what I noticed is that from a very young age, I was born into a body that was thin and healthy and very curvy. And so I got a lot of attention on my body at a very young age. And I see that a lot with young girls right now. And so what ends up happening is from that attention, which you would think would be positive, and I would have to say that no one was being mean and no one was trying to put me down. They were giving me attention. But what happens when the attention that we get is only about our bodies, there was a moment in time where I was like, oh my gosh, my body matters. Oh, I better keep my body in this way. If I don't, I won't get that approval. I won't get that attention. I won't get that love. Now, I grew up in a family that loves me, has always loved me. It didn't even come from that. But I think that diet culture and our culture is so strong in this thin privilege.
Pressure.
It's so much pressure. And so for me, it was if I let go of my control, if I let go and turn my body, turn my food over to a higher power, to God, I was going to gain weight. And if I gained weight, there was this feeling of, oh my gosh, I'm not going to belong. I'm not going to be seen. I'm not going to be loved. And so this control mechanism all kind of wrapped around belonging and receiving love. And at the end of the day, each of these woundings, each of these survival mechanisms all really come to at the base note is knowing and beginning to trust that we are loved no matter what.
Yeah. And what you're saying, of course, as always, there are going to be people that can absolutely relate in their own specific story. But I think also sometimes people who are experiencing those things that you talked about on a pressurizing level don't really sometimes maybe know how to take the time to even figure out or realize why it is that they're feeling this way. They just know that they want the end result of the body being just ideal to experience whatever they think they're going to experience, this perfect, whatever that is. You're trying to reach this goal, this constant goal with your body and not taking the time or knowing, which is probably how where your coaching comes in, but knowing what's at the root of this.
Yeah, I mean, that takes some introspection. Actually, that takes some desire to look deeper, because what most people will do is they have an upset. They have something they're upset around, their body, their food, they're wanting to fix it. And the choice that people take over and over again is another diet or another like binge or whatever. And so to find another path, and the other path is, where is this coming from? What is actually going on here? That is a road that's less travel, because it takes some introspection. It takes some depth. It takes some willingness to look at these behaviors, which diet culture normalizes, and say, you know what? This isn't serving me. This isn't serving me. I'm not who I want to be. And the thing is, Sonia, is that I see so many people who are living in this like low-grade discomfort, upset around their body and around food, that they don't even realize how much it is affecting their life because it is normalized. And so you don't, what I often say is, you don't have to get to the depths of despair like I did. You don't have to go to an eating disorder recovery center in order for you to look at the fact that some of these behaviors and some of these ways of speaking to yourself and holding yourself is not in alignment with the essence and the being that you are supposed to be, right? So it's really important to take that step when we're ready, right? And it does take a little bit of a dance to decide, am I ready? Am I not? And having someone like me or someone else who can go into this space with you. So there's another way to be with your body and your food that may be different.
Right. Oh, yeah. I agree with you 100%, especially the fact that on the social level, we're so socially driven. Even when you don't think that you are, we're heavily influenced, obviously, by the society and the environment and, you know, what other people think, even when we think that we don't. But also, from what you were saying, what I like to look at, too, is the protection of ourselves. We like to protect ourselves also by not wanting to tell ourselves the truth. We don't want to really see the truth. So I see that all the time, that we are very guarded. It's like we also don't want to hurt our own feelings at the same time. So it's kind of hard to see some of the truth. And then you get that moment of, oh, wow, I did not know that that's how I really felt and why I was doing this. So yeah, I find that very interesting when that happens.
Yeah. And I think we're all on our own path to this. So when I was getting to realize that this body food stuff was so here, I'll tell you the story. So one of my dark nights of the soul was after a huge binge, and I was lying in my bed and I was just in such the depths of despair of being like, this is my life. This is the way it's always going to be. I'm never going to feel good about myself. I'm always going to be binging. I'm always going to be controlling. And from that moment, I kind of geared up all the willpower I could. And I'm like, I'm going to fix this. Right. So you would think that that moment could be the moment of truth.
Right.
Like it's a moment where the light shone. But it did, but it took what it needed to take in order for me to get the message. So I willed up all the power, all the control, and I'm like, I'm going to fix my body. I'm going to fix my food. I'm going to get my body to this weight. And from that point, I'm going to know that I'm safe. And so I did. I got that magic number. And it was that moment that I stepped on the scale and saw that magic number that I realized the magic in that was to realize that my relationship with my body and food had nothing to do with my happiness. I was so miserable, probably one of the most miserable moments of my life, where I was just so in it with the food, so in it with my body, so out of control where I thought I was in control. And so that was the moment where the light bulb came on. That was a moment where it's like, this is a deeper thing. This is something I need to look at. And that, from that point, I was really on the journey of recovery. Now, the whole thing is the journey of recovery, really.
Right, right. But absolutely.
Yeah.
It's ongoing. And you're right. And it's this constant judgment of our bodies. And, you know, obviously, yes, you'll catch yourself doing it. You can be aware. You can be so aware. And I consider myself to be quite aware. It doesn't matter that you're so aware. You're still doing some of these things. And so you stop and you say, you wash your hands, and then you got to look at yourself and you're absolutely going to judge it. There's going to be something. You just have to find something that's not right today, or, oh my God, look at this, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So that's something that I absolutely noticed. And then I have moments where I just go, you know what? Today, you're not ever going to look up at the mirror today. You're just going to leave yourself alone and give yourself a break from the harassment.
Yeah. You know, that's an interesting piece. So, you know, people have heard about going into the mirror and telling them that they love themselves and, you know, doing that whole practice. And I do think that that can be helpful. But what you're talking about is quite a powerful thing. And I've done that same thing where it's like, it's actually not safe for me to look in the mirror today because I'm just going to be mean to myself. So the most loving act is for me to not see my image and allow myself to be in my body without the visual of what it looks like. Because we are more than just our image.
Right. And we change moment. The interesting thing too is that we are not consistently what we see in the moment. You can get up in the morning and, you know, we've all had that. We have that moment where we get up in the morning and yes, we look at ourselves and like, wow, you look really great today. Then later on, maybe lunchtime or in the afternoon, it's like, what happened? So the point is that we are not consistently that thing that we might want to judge ourselves so heavily on and stick to. It's just constant changing. And it has to do, obviously, yes, too, with our mood and things that are going on in the day that reflect outward as well. And I think those are things that you obviously also discovered.
Yeah. And what you're speaking to, if we look at it from the standpoint of not just today, we're looking at the cycles of life.
Yes.
We're looking at the seasons of life. And what I find is a lot of people are comparing themselves to when they were a certain age or even a certain time. So we look at the younger times in our life. And I don't know how many people, and myself included, like, gosh, I look back and I'm like, I haven't been fat at all. I can't believe I felt I didn't like my body. I'd love to have that body. But that's the same in this body, right? And it's realizing that our bodies change. And there are times that I am in a thinner body. Then there are the times where I'm holding more weight. I notice that the cycle throughout the year. Winter, my body just slims down for some reason. And during the summer, it holds a different weight. And being okay with that and knowing that we can't control that when we're in perimenopause, when we're in menopause, when we're a mother, when we're pregnant, when we're, you know, and I'm adding men here too, right? Every man has a different season of our lives, and we need to look at that and not go into this idea that what diet culture gives us is that every moment of our lives we're supposed to be in control. And that we're supposed to be a certain way. It's like allowing ourselves to show up the way that we are.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I'm glad you included men because, yeah, obviously as humans, yes, we're in these cycles. Life is about all of these cycles. But obviously for women, because of the design of our bodies to produce babies, to hold babies, there are just things about our bodies that are different in the sense of how they work, how they function. And then, of course, with the influence of society. And the fact of the matter is, too, Marla, it's not just modern day society. We're really carrying a history that is going like way, 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 way back. So we think that's part of this struggle that's there in women in particular about needing to be a certain thing or look a certain way. I think that those are all old influences brought into modern times. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, this has been going on for a really, really long time. This is going back to white privilege, thin privilege, you know, all of it. It goes way, way back. And it's so ingrained that we don't even question it.
Right. Absolutely. And then there are these models. And when I said models, I'm not talking about a human, but these models and these concepts and these ideas and these protocols that have been established for us, you know, as a society, we were talking in the Western world or not, but they're established, whether it's even in our families, we could have these protocols and these models and these guidelines that are influencing how we show up in the world. So, yeah, so we are a composite of all of this information. But what you're really trying to show people is how do you get to you? You know, how do you actually begin to get to you as opposed to being made up of all of this other information and being able to get to yourself? And when you get to yourself in the manner that you're talking about, it certainly gives you an opportunity to have a different perspective on how you treat yourself.
Yeah, and we have to unlearn, right? So what I hear you saying is like, we're all born into an environment that has certain rules and certain ways of being. People all have their families have a certain way of being with their bodies, being with food. Some of them can be, from what I have witnessed from many clients, a place where food was demonized, bodies were demonized. There can be violation in the environment. There can be a way of belonging with food, which is celebration and all of that. And through that, we have to find, as you were saying, our own truth and letting go of the beliefs that we're given. And that's what we're here to do, right? We have to do that with so many aspects of our life, is to unlearn what we are taught from our families and find out what is our own truth. No, when it comes to being out in the world and when it comes to diet culture telling us what to eat, when to eat, how to eat it, there is such a giving up of our own power. We turn it over. We ask others. We take in external information in order to get clear on what these bodies want. How do we even know what these bodies want unless we're in tune to it? So in my book, Befriend Yourself, I go deeper into this process, and we go deeper into this process from the the conversation around how do we become our own best friends? How do we take this idea of becoming our best friend to heal our relationship with our body and our food? And so we can take that idea of friendship and say, ah, how would my best friend speak to me? How would my best friend, if I was really hungry, they'd probably feed me, right? They wouldn't say, no, 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 you have to wait an hour because that's what those people on Instagram said, not eat before this time, right? And so it is that concept of getting closer and closer to our own inner voice, to our own inner authority, and not giving up that place no matter what anyone says. And through that place, not only are we healing our relationship with our body and our food, we're getting to know who we are, and we're allowing ourselves to be that authentic voice, that authentic being that actually was why we're here.
Yeah, you use the word authentic because I was going to ask you about that chapter, which obviously you kind of went into, but the chapter on authenticity, be authentic, and being enough, obviously they certainly do go together. Being authentic and being enough. So you've shared some things, but can you just more specifically talk about that? Being authentic and then being enough, because I do hear that where people are like, I want to know that I'm enough. But sometimes people don't even know what that means. That's been my experience in working with people. They don't even know what that means. So sometimes we get to a place where we're saying things because it's commonplace. But what is being enough? What does that really mean?
Well, I think that's a really good question. I would really invite everyone who's listening to really think about that. What is being enough mean to you? What is that experience of, if I'm enough, then, oh, I feel a certain way. I have a certain sense. I have a feeling inside me. Maybe it's relief. Maybe it's peace. Maybe it's freedom. And then, oh, if I'm enough, then I have gotten these accolades or these things checked off the list. And we can begin to understand what enoughness means to us when we really look at this. Because I think that, you know, that challenge, that struggle about being enough, I think that is a human experience. I think it's something that each of us have in different ways. I think we all come in with this experience of like, I just want to feel like I belong. I'm going to feel like I'm enough. And to not make ourselves wrong for having that, but having a little bit more compassion for ourselves around like, you know what, I am doing enough. You know, I had a moment yesterday where I was just, my husband was sharing with my son just all the things that mama does in her work. And I had this moment where hearing him talk about it, like, touched my heart so much because it made me realize, like, oh, wow, like, I'm doing a lot and I'm really showing up. And so those places of like, why aren't I somewhere else? Why haven't I gotten to this point? Maybe just come back to this place of compassion of like, wow, like, I'm really showing up in all these ways. And so sometimes we don't have that outside person to give that to ourselves, and we really need to slow down and take stock of what we have done and the ways that we are showing up for ourselves. And then while we do that, while we look at these places of like, wow, I've done this, I'm doing this, and I'm showing up here and I'm showing up there, you know what, I am enough. From that place, we can then see the places that we want to lean into more. We want to grow. We want to become. We want to learn. And see, the difference here, Sonia, is that we're doing it from a place of love. Because I was always trying to grow from this place of, I'm broken. There's something wrong with me. Once I get my body in check, once I fix this behavior, then I'm lovable. But when I acknowledge myself and then I realize, oh, this behavior that I'm doing is not serving me, because I love myself and I love my life and I love those people around me, that has a different inspiration, that has a different access point in our body and our being. And I find that I can see the situation through different, more compassionate eyes.
Yes. And it is. We live in a state of constant quantifying and measuring. And that's why, yes, what you said about being enough, you know, it becomes mathematical when you think about being enough, but you have to be measuring and quantifying something. And that is what we're constantly doing, is measuring. We're measuring against something. And I, you know, for me, I think, okay, well, what are you measuring against? And that kind of can stop you in your tracks when you realize you have to be measuring yourself against something to even come up with that feeling of, you know, not being enough, right?
Right. Yeah. And oftentimes it's a parent's voice inside of us.
Yes.
Or it's an expectation that we put that is so old, that's not even in alignment with where we are in our lives. It doesn't even make any sense. And we can go back and just be like, oh yeah, that's, let me just delete that because that's not even true anymore. And sometimes it's so beautiful because it's like, it's gone.
Yes.
To see that sometimes it is that simple.
Yeah, you're right.
Acknowledging.
Absolutely. We just get used to complicated. So even when it's really simple, you know, it's gotta be harder than this. There was something that you said when you talked about your husband explaining to your son, and my kids are older. So my older son said just the other day, he said to me, Mom, he goes, you have really made full use of your life. I know. He goes, you have just made full use of your life. And of course, I never thought about it that way because of all the different things that they've seen me do and the struggles also that they've seen me go through. Mm-hmm. So he added that. He says, from all the things that you went through, and then here you are over here now, you have made full use of your life. And yes, and he did say to me, and he says, and that's why you're such an inspiration to me. And as, you know, as a parent, as a mother, it just warms you, you know, it's just the best, the best you can get from your child.
Just right. It's so wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. Because I think in those moments where we inspire someone by our lives, even if we don't feel like we're doing enough or being enough or getting enough, to have that reflection is so powerful. Yes.
We're coming to you from KPFK 90.7 FM in Southern California and streaming live at kpfk.org. You are listening to The Expansion Zone with me, Sonia Barrett, your host, and of course, my guest, Marla Mervis Hartman, author of Befriend Yourself, A Guide to Freedom with Food, Peace with Your Body, and Confidence in Your Life. And so we're going to get back to chatting with Marla. But, you know, I want to say that everything that we're talking about, again, it's really important because it's leading you through the course of your life, whether you are 20 years old and listening to this, or whether you are 40, or whether you are 80 years old, there is a journey that has taken place. And where we are now and how we're showing up in this moment is a culmination of all of that and what we think we are. So it's never too late to see what we're saying and go ahead and make those changes if it really hits you that, you know what, I've been living like this in my mind for such a long time and I don't want to do that anymore. So I just wanted to point that out. This, it takes you up to 100 years old. You know, that's the journey. So Marla, before I ask you other questions, is there anything specifically that you think, based on everything we've said, that you'd like to add to it and you want to share a bit more?
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge that. So what I'm often asked is, if there's one thing that you can do to heal your relationship with your body and your food, what would that be? And I would say, hands down, that is how we're speaking to ourselves. The things that we're saying to ourselves, the way that we're talking to ourselves. And I don't think it's something that you can just switch the positive affirmation light on and then keep it on. It's something we need to be working on a continual basis. And when we look at it to begin with, we can notice, wow, there are patterns that I have. There can be a pattern where I look in the mirror, I say something negative. Oh, I'm around this person. I leave and I start feeling bad about myself. Oh, I compare myself to someone online, right? And so we need to look at when we are speaking mean, we're not speaking like a best friend would speak to us. And we need to begin to change that. Now, that's not an easy thing. And we, like I said, we can't just turn it off and turn it on. What I notice for myself and for my clients is that when there is a really strong negative voice inside of us, that kind of voice where you're just like, oh my gosh, please just stop, right? And I used to have those loops of that same thing saying to me, mean about my body and food. And I would just want to shut it up. However, that voice, that loud voice is getting our attention. It's like a child that's like having a tantrum that needs love and attention. So sometimes these really strong voices inside of our head need us to turn and look and say, what's going on here? I mean, if we take it back into the concept of friendship, befriending ourselves, have you ever been with a friend where you're just like, no, 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 and they go, are you all right? Because what you're talking about is like, I don't know, like, are you okay? It's that same experience we can do for ourselves when we're having this negative talk that we can be like, am I okay? What am I actually afraid of here? What is actually present? What is this voice actually wanting to get my attention for? And that voice can be very intelligent. It can say, please stop. Or it can say, please, more love. It can say, please get support. It can give us, once we actually tune into the fear of the upset, there's a deeper layer of compassion that can happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that brings to mind the idea again of listening to our bodies, something that we are certainly not taught. And so most people tend to feel that they don't really know what's good for them or what's best for them. It's always something outside. Certainly you need the assistance of, you know, whatever, medical or therapy or whatever. But being able to actually listen to your body and become familiar, again, with patterns, with certain things that your body is trying to advise you of. I find that I've lived that way for a long time, yes, with listening to my body. So I'm very familiar with what works for it and what doesn't work for it. Or I'll say to my body, okay, tell me what you need right now. I do. I talk to my body like it's like a crazy person, like it's somebody else. I go, how can I support you right now in what you need? And I'm not saying that from a perfect standpoint, because sometimes I say that after I've been frustrated with my body doing something I don't want it to do. Then I do say, okay, how can I support you? Tell me what you need. And I find that I do get directed many times to, I get a take, okay, well, oh, we need to eat this. Okay, maybe I need to go get that. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Yeah, because I teach that idea of we need to tune into our body, and people are like, I don't even know how to do that. I don't even know what that means. Like, what? Like, how do I ask my body? And you gave a very good example. You just ask your body. If you give attention there, sooner or later, the body's going to be like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for asking. Thank you. Thank you for being patient with me. Thank you for asking. And that's a muscle. It's our body holds our intuition. And so we just need to keep coming back to it and tuning in. You may notice, oh, tension means this. Oh, a lethargy means this experience. Oh, hunger means, oh, am I hungry? Oh no, that's I'm thirsty. I'm upset.
Absolutely, right? And then you develop a trust. Then you start to trust your body and yourself. And that's certainly a big thing for people is self-trust. But everywhere you go, I love that saying that everywhere you go, there you are. And so you are your best friend, whether you like it or not, because you can't get away from yourself. But what I'd like to do now is, Marla, would you give us some information before we go a little bit further? We have more time, quite a bit of time left. If somebody wants to work with you or obviously get the book, anything at all that you want to share, I don't know if you're doing workshops, whatever you want to share in terms of people connecting with you.
Yeah. So you can go to my website, which is loveyourbodyloveyourself.com. You're going to find there that you can find my free course, which is called Breaking the Cycle of Emotional Eating. Now, I know that free sometimes doesn't mean that it's very deep. That course goes really deep, and you can get a lot of resources from that book. From that course. And you can also get my book there. Of course, it's on Amazon. If you're listening to this in early 2025, I have a book club coming up where this is going to be a deep dive into the book, along with a lot of coaching and a lot of support and a lot of communal support that I'm really excited to offer. One of the things that I love to offer people is the opportunity just to ask me questions. So go on to Instagram or email me. And my Instagram is Love Your Body, Love Yourself Always. Or email me and just ask me a question. Ask me something that's going on, that's challenging you, that is your struggle. Sometimes we have that one thing that we feel like we're so alone around. And by tuning into that and having someone where you can share, someone who that feels safe, someone that feels like may get it, that is, I want to offer that to you all.
Awesome. Very good. Yes. She is definitely what everything that Marla is saying anyway, as far as being a coach. I think that if somebody's going through, or even if you're not going through extreme situations, but you're going through other things, it all ties together. I think to be able to reach out and check out her work would definitely be encouraged. One of the things I want to share with you really quickly, because I forgot about this, but then it came back to me. In high school, I crack up, but in high school, I definitely was your nerd type. You'd never catch me loitering in the halls. I was like where I was supposed to be. You know, I was just that nerd, you know, pigtails. Anyway, the cheerleading girls always look so cute. You know, everybody knows that the way they usually look. And I am going through a phase, I think maybe 16. It's like, I wanted to look cuter. And it just couldn't happen. I just was not getting that look. It was just not happening for me. Tried as I might, it was just not happening. And so one day, I think senior year, I graduated high school as a junior, actually. And when it was at that year when I graduated, I just came to this realization that I just suddenly didn't care. And in that moment, I didn't care anymore. And in a way that was definitely freeing. It wasn't, I don't care, and then I was hiding something. I just came to this overwhelming realization that I didn't care. So then I went and I started to do my shopping. You know, you don't make much money then, but I'd buy new clothes. And one of the problems was that my clothes was always like, I think two sizes. I wore my clothes like way bigger. So suddenly I started to wear my clothes, you know, more fitted, more closer to my body, but everything was based on me. It was based on how I wanted to feel, and I felt good. And suddenly, like, I just suddenly got all this attention, you know, from these people. I go back over to the high school, you know, to whatever reason, and the senior guys that are there, suddenly they're checking me out, you know, ball players. It was very, very interesting. But I had so shifted where it was just about my own pleasure and feeling good. And I can honestly say that in that moment, that's what it was, that I was really unfazed by that attention. I was just completely unfazed by it because I felt good about myself.
Oh, I love that exfoliate. So good. It's such a great example of magnetism and authentic being, is that you didn't get that attention because you were trying to conform or be like the cheerleaders and that group, that you were like, you let it go. And then you went and met yourself in an authentic way on how you wanted to look and what you wanted to wear. And it wasn't about what you were wearing anyway. It was you stepping into yourself.
That's a great story. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just happened to remember it because it was so big. And I think about that sometimes. And I think to myself, wow, you actually didn't have to like pretend to, I'm going to be positive. I didn't know anything about that at the time. So this literal shift actually took place in my consciousness. And I remember that feeling so good about myself that it didn't really matter. And that is for real people. That is definitely true.
Well, and I think that goes to share is like that you can see people out in the world who are just on fire and they have so much magnetism and you're not really looking at their weight. It's just how they hold themselves and how they care. And you can have a woman who has the ideal body standard and you can look at them and just be like, there's no substance there because they're not, they're in what I would say was my own journey of like being uncomfortable and not feeling enough and feeling, you know, all of these things. So it is really about owning ourselves.
It is absolutely about that. And I, you know, and I look at Hollywood and I feel for the women in Hollywood. And I tell you why I feel for them. Having been around long enough and to see some of the what we call stars or celebrities and seeing them maybe from in their 20s or even younger and watched how our society, because we celebrate celebrities in such a way and they're glorified, and then they start to change, the women in particular, their bodies change, their face change, and the judgment is so extreme from, you know, from the public. And of course there's nothing much they can do. They can't hide themselves because this is their job, this is what they do, so they have to show up with that, whoever it is that's showing up now in the body, in the face, and it causes a lot of issues, which is why we see a lot of the surgeries and what is it, body dysmorphia. I mean, there's issues where you can't figure out how that person doesn't see that the face doesn't look, you know, your face looks different. You keep doing stuff to it and you start to look different. That they probably aren't even recognizing how extreme that has gone. A lot of emotional stuff right there. A lot of challenges.
There is. And when you're in the spotlight, when you're being seen, and I think what we've noticed by that whole world is that when you're seen, then you have more of an opportunity for people to make comments about you. And that's not even celebrities at this point. This is social media, right? That the, you know, put yourself out there and allowing yourself to be seen, you know, and just notice people's ridiculousness around commenting on other people's bodies.
Yeah.
I would say in some ways, society has gotten better. There is a sense of positive body image. There are more people out there like me. You can get on an algorithm on social media where you'll see a lot of like body positivity memes, and you'll get a lot of feedback on how to be with your body and the food to eat and how to listen to yourself, and so much healing. And yet there's still that other side of it where there is just negativity around people's bodies and really thinking that someone has the right to speak about our bodies. And that's where we can, in our own right, notice how we are talking about other people's bodies I mean, I find even bringing anyone's body size up, whether they think it's thin or even if it's like, oh, she lost weight. It's just best not to. It's best because going on with that person. Yeah. And I find that people who are really in it with their body and they're really in that whole diet cycle, it's like even when they get to that weight, then there's that fear that they're going to gain the weight. So there's sometimes on that cycle, that diet cycle, there's no freedom.
It's really interesting. Yes, because if somebody loses weight, yes, we do tend to say, oh my God, you look so good, which means that before you didn't. I mean, if you think about it, it's like, before that, you didn't look good. It's like, it looks so good. What did you do? And so if you're in a certain state, that could give you a complex, because if indeed you lost weight and weight starts coming back, yes, then a person can start getting a little stressed and fearful, and they let themselves down, and shame, and how everybody else is going to look at them now that they've gained it back. So there's a lot of pressure, but at the same time, in the end, it's so much BS. I just have to say, a lot of what we stress ourselves with, when it comes down to it, it's a lot of nonsense. That's my word. My husband says, go ahead, babe, say it. I go, that's just nonsense. But it's a lot of nonsense that we invest in. And that to me fascinates me. So yeah, so it gives me, I look at what nonsense are you involved in today? What are you investing your energy and time in this moment? I think that's something that people need to start asking.
I like that. I think I'm going to dive into that. What nonsense? Yeah, I've been feeling like, where am I not going to tolerate? I'm not going to tolerate these lower experiences that I'll tolerate in myself. It's like, no, we're not doing that.
Exactly, because it's nonsense.
Nonsense. It's not true.
It's not true. So yes, I love these conversations though with myself, because yeah, I do, as I said, talk to myself in that manner, where I'll go, what are you even talking about? What are you even talking about? That has nothing to do with anything. And so you have the power to really shut it off. But like you said, these things take time, and you master certain things over time of doing them. You start to get more comfortable with shutting certain things off, right?
Absolutely. And that's one of the wonderful things about age, right? We get wiser, hopefully.
You get wiser to realizing that you weren't as wise as you thought you were. That's what I learned. I go, oh, so I really was not as smart as I thought I was, but you know, but at the same time, you're at a new range of, like you said, of awareness that humbles you. It can really humble you. And then you get to see more. Then you get to, I think, have more change, because you just sort of surrender to that realization, like, oh, you know, it's okay. It's okay. So this conversation, again, that we're having, it is significant in every area of one's life. So I hope that my audience, you know, which I have an intelligent audience, they love this kind of information. But to really take that in, utilize it, take a look at oneself in this moment and see where you're pressuring yourself. And probably it really is a lot of nonsense. So check that out. Anything else that you would like to add that I may have missed? We covered a lot of things, but
we did cover a lot of things. I think we talked about diet culture. We talked about the idea of becoming our own best friend and how that can heal our relationship with our body and our food. We talked about nonsense and the things that we're believing. We talked about diving into authenticity and the power of pleasure and listening to our bodies. So I feel like we've definitely dove into a lot of things. If there's some question that you have around the things that we talked about, like I mentioned before, please reach out to me. Yeah. Thank you, Sanat, for having me.
Very good. I guess we have a couple of more minutes. With people hearing your story, is there anything else that you would hope or you would love for, somebody to get from your story and perhaps reach out to wanting to be part of what you're doing, or even just an awareness? Is there anything specifically? If there isn't, because you have covered a lot.
I would say that what comes along with food behaviors and body is shame. There can be a lot of shame and guilt that shows up. And I want to speak to that because when shame comes up, it is such a powerful emotion. It is so powerful, and it is not the emotion to decide your next step.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're in shame, and when we're in shame around a food behavior, so take, for example, binge eating. If you are binge eating and you now are going through this wave of shame, it is really important before you do anything to be with yourself, to come back to compassion, to come back to compassion through curiosity. Oh, why did this happen? What is present here? What was I feeling emotionally? You know, really getting curious. And I feel like curiosity opens up so many voices of compassion. If we don't do that, what ends up happening is we stay in the shame, and then the shame says, you need to diet. You need to restrict. You just ate all that food. You need to maybe purge or what. It gives us action steps that are not for us. And actually, it gives us action steps that keeps us on the cycle. Because people will come to me and they're like, I need to fix the food. If I fix the binge eating, then I won't. If I fix the food, then I won't binge eat. And like, no, we need to fix the shame around the binge eating so that you don't go back into the cycle of needing to binge eat again. Because the shame space is where so much compassion can come in, and so much understanding, and so much love that we can change that whole cycle. And of course, that is a deep process. That is something that I love to share and guide people in. And it's really one of my expertise is to support people with a lot of these behaviors, whether it be binge eating or overeating or restriction. But shame is a big piece of that. And I think talking about it and normalizing it. Listen, I had a client just the other day was saying, oh, just feel so much shame talking about these stories. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like none of this phases me. This is such a safe place to share these stories because I've done it all. I've seen it all, you know, and I think there are so many people who are struggling more than we realize. And we put on this face that we got it going on.
Right.
I think that if it's not food or our body, there's so many other places, and we're all in this human experience, and we're all struggling in our own way. And this can bring a lot of insight and self-care and self-love.
Can you give your website again?
My website is loveyourbodyloveyourself.com. Please come and check it out and reach out to me.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you, having you on the show. I really, really enjoyed our talk and all that you've shared, Marla. Really, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, the listening audience, and our board engineer. Please be sure to visit theexpansionzone.com for the archive of all shows, including this one, and also subscribe to our newsletter to remain updated. To find out more about my work, please visit therealsoniabarrett.com. And as always, I like to remind you to live life to its fullest and question everything. Until next time, see you then.
The program that you just heard was a rebroadcast. It previously aired here on KPFK.
Donate your used car, truck, or boat to the KPFK Vehicle Donation Program. It's an easy way to help support KPFK and receive a tax deduction. All you have to do is call 877-KPFK-AUTO. An operator will arrange a good time to pick up your vehicle. 877-KPFK-AUTO or go online to kpfk.org.
Hi, this is Robbie Krieger from The Doors, and you are listening to Fiercely Independent KPFK 90.7